Hello and welcome to the Ideas Into Results podcast. My name is Jeremy Couch and I am your host. I want to say thank you for taking time out of your day to tune in, to check this out, to see what this podcast can bring to your life as far as value and insight and maybe some inspiration and some tools to equip you on your journey. The goal really is helping you move from idea all the way to result. And that takes a lot in between. And I think that's where we struggle, is in the in-between, the discipline, the discouragement sometimes, the challenges, the setbacks, maybe just not having a good plan, maybe not being able to execute well. That's what we're here for, is to bring you experts and practitioners and people who can speak into various areas and help equip you on your journey. So thanks for joining me on this journey. I hope it's a great time for you and that you get a lot of value from it. So my first guest is Harry Spate. I want to say thank you to Harry for taking time to join us, to impart his wisdom upon us, and to really help me get this podcast started. He was a great encourager to me along the way. And Harry is the founder of Selling with Dignity. He's got a book by the same name. I highly recommend it, that you check it out, that you visit Selling with Dignity online and learn more about the services he provides. He's a podcaster. He's got the Sales Made Easy podcast. He's all over social media. If you're on LinkedIn, be sure to look him up, and he's just always putting out great content, inspiration, helpful tools. He's someone you want to connect with for sure. So we have a wide-ranging conversation here that I think will really help, hopefully encourage you and inspire you to take action on your goals and dreams today. So I'm going to turn it over now to my conversation with Harry Spate. Harry, my friend, welcome to the podcast. It's great to connect with you.
It's so awesome to be here, Jeremy. What's the good word with you?
You know, it's funny you said that. I want you to tell me about that phrase. I noticed when I listen to your podcast, you always start with that. Tell me about that phrase.
What's the good word?
Yeah, you start with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Years ago, I got sick of how are you today or how's it going? I got sick of that. And then what I also didn't like was there are people that would respond negatively. And they go, oh, I'm having such a hard day. So I like optimism and positivity. There's enough negativity in the world. So I said, I'm going to do my little part and help people be inspired to think about what is good going on in their life. So simply, what is the good word came out of that. And I've been using it for years. I can't even tell you how long, but I think it's been a very long time.
I love it. I just noticed that. And how do you see people responding to that?
Oh my goodness. It's really great. People actually think, because it throws them off. They can't say fine. They'll look at me sometimes and say, I don't know. And then other times they'll say life is the good word. You know, they'll come up with something. It's very rare. And, you know, once in a while, I'll have someone give me a remark. I'm like, wow, that's the first time I've heard that one. And so it's a conversation starter, too.
Right? 100%. It is. I think that's a great way to go about it. And I would say the good word for us here is, you know, we're having this conversation. You and I have talked for a while now. We met, I think it was last year, through a mutual friend at an event, and then connected afterwards, and we've stayed in touch, and we've talked a lot, similar interests. And you know, I was actually talking to you about this journey of relaunching this podcast that, you know, I'd podcasted in the past and took a break. And as we talked, you gave me some great ideas and some encouragement. And in our last conversation, I said, let's just have a podcast conversation next time we meet. So our meeting today is that it's hey, let's have a podcast conversation and record it. And so I would say that's the good word, is that we're actually moving this thing forward, man. So I appreciate that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's so great. The whole idea, Jeremy, as you know, we have these great ideas. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we overthink them. we go down this path, like, what if no one, like, and with podcasting, what if nobody listens? You know, what if, you know, I say the wrong thing? What if no one likes my voice? I mean, I had all of these thoughts. Like, I don't even know enough people to podcast. I had all the negative thinking that goes on with us. And sometimes you just have to plow through it, or you have somebody that gives you a little nudge as you're standing at the precipice. Yeah. They come up behind you and go, "Dink," and you're like, "All right, I'm in." So what was it for you?
You know, I think hearing myself talk to you about my desire to do this again and get going, and just through our conversations, almost becoming maybe a little bit personally frustrated of why I wasn't moving forward. And maybe it was some of the things you mentioned. And so sometimes it's just having that conversation with someone else, hearing yourself say it out loud, and you go, "So why am I not doing this again? Why am I not moving forward?" Whether it's starting a podcast, whether it's changing certain habits in my life, whether it's this goal that I've had forever, and I just won't take that step. I think sometimes you just need another person.
Yeah.
To give you some, maybe it is a nudge, maybe it is some encouragement, but it's having someone else in your life, I think, to help get you going. That's it. Like you just said, man, it's taking a step. It's moving towards what you want to do. And so I think through our conversations over this last year, I've seen that about you, is that you're good about moving some things ahead. You were talking about podcasting yourself. I'm curious what that process was like for you based on what you just said. You kind of maybe had these thoughts of, who am I? Who do I right. know? How will I even produce enough content? But one thing I know about you is you're always producing a lot of content. How yeah, he laughs because he knows he's got the videos, and I'm looking over here at your website, and man, you're always putting out these great shows through the Sales Made Easy podcast. How did you get that started, understanding and knowing these fears, these thoughts, these insecurities, whatever they were that were holding you back? What happened for you to make it happen?
The short answer is a friend asked me to podcast. The long answer is my friend asked me to podcast a couple of times.
Okay.
The first time I went, "Yeah, sure," and hoped that he wouldn't act on it. And he didn't. So months went by and he called me out. This is all during COVID. And he called me out. I was super frustrated. This was probably one of the most frustrating times in my life, was during COVID. A lot of thoughts were going on in my head. Was I living up to my potential? This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm, looking forward to retirement in like 10 years. It's like, I was disgusted with myself. And so my friend, we don't speak. I mean, we've known each other for years, but we're not like buddies, right? So I get this message on LinkedIn or Facebook. I got, Eric's mentions you in a post. So I listen to the post. It's a video. And he says, I'm doing this positivity challenge. And I want to get it started. It was 30 days. And the first person I'm tagging is one of the most positive people I know, Harry Speight. And I teared up.
Wow.
That's how bad I was in a position, right? Because I went from this, I'm choking up now, but I was in such a state where I forgot how positive I was. And this was perfect. I'll try to get my composure here.
But great.
It was perfect. It was what I needed. I felt like, so I did this positivity challenge, and he said, so what I did was I did a video of myself. I said, I've never done a video on social media. I'm going to do a video right now. Tears in my eyes. It was a train wreck. I'm looking down at the camera. I'm stuttering. It's like 3 minutes long. It's still there on LinkedIn. It's like, oh my God, I hope no one ever sees that. But it was me raw. And then after I did that, he says, "Would you like to podcast?" I'm like, "Hell yeah." So I mean, I was just all in at that point because I felt this was the creator's way of waking me up, is that there was a channel here. This was the person he was using to say, "Wake up." And I had all the doubts. I said, "I don't even know how to podcast." All the things we were talking about. I don't have a good voice. I'm not very conversational. You know, every negative thing I said, but I said, "I'm going to do it because I'm going to support you." And that's what I did. So for a year, or maybe, yeah. So for a year, we podcasted together. And I was so inspired by the people that came on the show. And it's like you and I were talking earlier. It's like, what am I doing? This is what am I doing? And I kept asking that. And so that's just led to a whole different persona for me, which is going back to my positivity and just really trying to bring good into the world from my source here. So yeah, long answer for a short question.
No, that's a wonderful, very open and transparent answer. I wrote down a few things because there was a lot there. So I'm curious to go back to what you said. You said you hoped he wouldn't follow through when he initially asked. Can you talk about that? Like, what was that thinking?
Oh man, yeah. So this is going, I have to put myself in the moment there. But really, sometimes you say yes and you say, "Oh, I don't know if I want to do that." And so when we didn't, it was a relief because that was getting out as you and I have had conversations about the comfort zone. When you say yes to something to me that was drastic like that, it's wow, I'm going out of my comfort zone and I like my comfort zone. So hopefully I don't have to go out of it. But when he asked me the second time and I said yes, it's like I'm just gonna have to be uncomfortable. And once you go down the path of being uncomfortable and making the changes, it's just the next thing gets easier. You start seeing it's like, okay, so what's holding me back? I don't want to be uncomfortable. I've been uncomfortable before. I made the change. It's all good. And I can talk myself through it. So yeah, what's your thought on that? Have you
Well,
done similar things?
a poster child for it, I think, if I'm being honest. I mean, this is very powerful, I think, here, because I think so many people can resonate with that. If we're being vulnerable and honest like you are, there is a comfort zone where we don't want to step out of. Even this is the crazy thing about the comfort zone. We don't really actually want to be there.
No,
Because of what you said, you weren't living up to your potential, but your comfort zone was, I guess, familiar and safe, and that going to your potential would stretch you, would challenge you, would put you in these positions of having to be, I guess, vulnerable and out there and maybe exposed in some ways. I think this is where so many people are today.
I am not a hero in any sense of this, right? There are people I look up to, and I know people look up to me, but I just say I'm everybody else. There is nothing special, and it's just a matter of like if you want to do something, whatever it is in life, if you want to do something, you have to get comfortable with what's uncomfortable. If someone said, like I said years ago when I was in high school, I wanted to be a stand-up comic. And I did comedy shows in high school. I did, you know, one man get up in front of the audience, and do my comedy routines. I didn't do that for the next 25 years. And it was just in the back of my mind. It's like, I'll never know what that was like. I'll never know what stand-up comedy was for me. And I never pursued it. Then I was in Washington, D.C., and I walked by the comedy club. And outside of the comedy club was 12-week comedy class for beginners. Without hesitancy, I dropped a few $100s, started going to I went to the first class, Jeremy, and the comic said, you need to get out to the class. You need to get out and do open mics. Who's going to do it? And I went, well, I'm here. I'm going to raise my hand. He says, I will go with you. And we're going to go, and told me the club. So in the parking lot of the club, I got very little material at this point. It's an open mic night. He calls, or I call him, I'm like, are you here? And he says, I can't make it. I don't know if that was planned,
right,
just to get me out. But so here I was in the car, and I had this decision to make. Do I go in or do I go home? And I went in, and I was petrified. Mm. No friends, complete stranger, gave my name to the guy, Harry Spates, and I'll do whatever, 5 minutes or something. I've never been that nervous, right? But it was just such a rush of there was some laughter, there's a lot of silence, but there's some laughter. So that is at my core. I mean, it's like you do things in life where you say, I'm going to do what is extremely uncomfortable. And you walk into a bar with a bunch of comics and I'm going to do this, right? I wanted to feel what it was like to feel to be a stand-up comic. And I pursued that for a few months and I learned a lot. But the point was, if I never did it, I would still be talking about what would that have been like? Why didn't I? I would have the regret, and I don't want regrets. And I don't think any of us want regrets. Yeah. And so, like you said, we don't want to be in the comfort zone. And yet we somehow, for some reason, can't get past this feeling of it's going to be awkward. You know, people are going to look at me. Mm-hmm. People may not laugh, or people may think I'm silly or whatever. But man, we're missing out on so much when we just let that, you know, take over, unfortunately.
That's a great story. What was it like in that moment where you had to decide, am I going in? Or because you could have left. There was no one with you. You could have just bailed. No one knew you. So do you remember what was it that said, all right, I'm going in?
I don't know if I remember, but I can see myself in my car and just looking at the dashboard, being tempted. It's like, do I turn the key and go home? And it's like, no, I don't know what I said exactly, but it's along the lines, like, I said I wanted to do this. I got to do it. I can't make excuses. So I did. Whoa. Right. I've made excuses. I've made plenty of excuses in life, but that one, I didn't. It was a 25 year regret.
Yeah.
And I was given a chance. It's like, all right, put up or shut up. Don't be saying you did comedy when you really didn't. You did some skits in front of a few hundred people, but now's your opportunity. See how funny you really are, Harry.
Right. I just love that. Again, because you were there alone. Like, you held yourself accountable to make that next step. I think that says a lot in that moment. And because I think that's a metaphor really for a lot of what we deal with these days, where we're faced with a decision in front of us to do something that is out of our comfort zone. But we're able to totally bail on it and no one would ever know, because we might not tell people, hey, I've got this goal, I've got this dream, I've got this thing I'm working towards. We just keep it to ourselves. So if we don't act on it, no one ever knows.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I think in this case, now that you mentioned that, I'm sure the comic told me to go in and I'll be fine.
Probably.
Right? Yeah. He didn't say, you know, yeah. I'm sure he gave me some encouraging words. And that, you know, looking back at that, was the kind of the accountability partner.
Yeah.
Right? Where sometimes we need that, because you said no one would know, but actually he knew.
He knew.
And he would have asked if I went in or not.
Mm.
And so maybe that, you know, thinking back, maybe that was that little bit of accountability there may have been it. Or just go, I think there was more of that than me going home and telling my wife I didn't go in. Right. that too would have been embarrassing. But she knows me enough that would have been, she was like, oh, brother, sure, whatever.
Here he goes again.
Exactly.
But it's a great point, though, on that, even thinking through that little piece of encouragement and just driving this point home of, we have ideas, we have goals. Who is it in our life that can encourage us and sometimes give us the kick that we need to get going, to take some action? So I think that is a great story to illustrate that. I wanted to touch on your book. I mean, you're an author. Well, a lot of people haven't written a book. You know, we got Selling with Dignity, which is great. And you were kind enough to give me a copy after we first met. It looks like this was written during COVID, right? So talk about that in light of what you said earlier, of that was a frustrating time for you, but you were able to write a book.
Right. So the book, first of all, the book idea came 10 years earlier. This is a little bit how I roll.
That's
the
okay.
Comedy was 25 years. The book idea was 10 years.
But you did it.
And so I didn't do it for 10 years. Okay. Didn't do it. Right. But
that's okay.
You're 100% right. I did end up doing it.
Yes.
So the podcasting led me to the uncomfortable.
Okay.
Right. So I was now in the discomfort or uncomfortable zone, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I was making change and becoming the positive guy again, mm-hmm. looking at opportunities. And I was doing some meditation and journaling and really focusing on what my ideal life was. And I really didn't know what my ideal life was. So this was, I was up early in the morning, it was zero dark 30, whatever that means, but it was early and it was dark. And I was just journaling with a cup of coffee and just started thinking about things I like to do and what my future. And so I pictured myself in my future and said, you know, today I'm waking up and it's a beautiful day, blah, blah, blah. So I was doing this for weeks and still no results. Still, there's nothing going on, right? It's like, people, why do you journal? I'm not getting anything out of this. This is kind of what my thought was as I chuckle about it. But what happened was, not in journaling, but outside of the journaling, on January 2nd, 2021, it was a day off still. I think that's how New Year's was celebrated, I think. And I just teared up. My wife was doing some gardening. She looks at me. She says, what's going on with you? And I said, I got to write the book. And it was just like this voice said, write the book you thought about years ago.
Mm.
And I knew it. Mm. So I literally, after my wife was like, are you okay? You're not dying, right? I went directly to the computer, because this, in my mind, was the voice of God. It's like Moses. I mean, it's not as profound as getting the Ten Commandments and the burning bush, but it was the voice of God saying to Harry, do this. You have a message that will help people, go do it. And it's like, I'm going to do this. So I literally got out of the chair, went right over the computer, started writing out an outline. I've never written a book before, folks. I didn't know how to write a book, but I was pretty sure I needed titles of chapters. And I had them in my head. They just flowed. You know, it was like everything so my background of being a missionary and doing mission work in other countries and being very servant-minded, getting into sales and being around people who are only about themselves. And not that all salespeople are like that, but they're really driven for money and you can really care about the customer that much. It was all about the money and, you know, that world of profitability, gross margin. I mean, that's what I lived in for the past 20 years. And so I did that as a servant-minded individual. So I knew that my philosophical views of serving others could work in a Fortune 500 company that was driven by numbers and profit. I could do the same. I could hold on to my values and still succeed. And I said, there's a lot of people that don't think they can sell because they don't want to change their servant-mindedness. And I'm going to help them. And that's what I wrote the book about, is to help those people, not the ones that they don't care about.
Right.
Everybody's a number. I'm going to make money. No matter who I talk to, I don't care. If you're not interested, I'm going to go find the next person and get through you. You're wasting my time. That type of stuff. Not that everyone's like that, but the book is not for those people, generally.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we'll talk more about the book here in a second, but I wanted to ask, so how long did it take you then from that outline to actually complete it? Do you recall?
Yeah, it was the book was published in early October. So okay. It was 9 months from January 2nd to early October. And so our anniversary is October 8th. I was holding a book. So and that was, yeah.
What was the I'm always interested in routines, just thinking through working towards a goal. What was the daily or regular writing process for you? Was it, I'm going to write for a certain amount of time, a certain amount of words? What was
There is nothing like that with me. I am I'm as free spirit of an individual as there is. So
that's okay.
Okay. So what I did was it was a passion project. So I woke up every day where I couldn't wait to write. Now, virtually every day. There are some days I just needed a break, but I just was writing. And do you ever, I made some mistakes, but I didn't write in paper. I was writing on my computer.
Huh.
Sometimes I was writing on paper, but most of the times I was writing on a computer in Word. Or first it was a Google Doc. And it was a disaster. I'll tell you that story quickly, but the writing daily thing was not for me. It was because that's a routine. Mm-hmm. I don't like routines, but passion, I like. Mm. So if I was passionate about, like some days, I would write for 8 to 10 hours. Whoa. I just could not get up to eat, but I mean, I couldn't get up I just was like so in the zone, memories and, things are just flowing and you're in flow. You don't even realize it, but it started at 8 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock. And I was like, what are we going to do for dinner? And that was the way it worked. Then the next day I might say, yeah, I got nothing today. And that's okay. I mean, who judges that stuff? Nobody, right? It's you. You get to decide if you want to write a book and how you want to do it, which is the beauty of life. I wanted it done after a couple of months, I spoke to a person that publishes books. And I asked him to take a look. And he says, you got a book here, but it's a mess. Because I had all these chapters in Google Drive saved as each chapter, right?
Okay.
And he says, can you just put these in some kind of order? I'm like, but we did. And then eventually it started to take shape. And then over the course of months, and I would have days where I'm like, I deleted chapters. I just trashed them. And he said, don't do that again. Right. Because the content is still good. Yeah. So even though you don't like the chapter, save the chapter. So I went back into the trash on Google and, you know, pulled stuff out. It's like, okay, I can always use that content, but you know, you learn. And then I was happy with it. I said, I just want to be done with this because it's taking too long. And then it wasn't good enough. So I went back, right? So you want to be done. And it wasn't good enough. So I had all this back and forth going on. No one's going to read this. Oh, this is really good. It's crazy. But eventually it's like, I got to let go and just kind of let go, let God. And that's how it ended up.
And you did it. I hear you talk about that process and the 10 years. I just love, though, that you did it. And I think when we talk about goals, vision, dreams, whatever you want to label it, I think sometimes we put a lot of pressure on ourselves sometimes. Oh, I got to get this going. I got to get this done now. And then we, for whatever reason, we don't act. And then we abandon it, I guess is what I'm saying, is at some point, you know, you can get frustrated enough that you're not taking this action that you know you need to take, and you're not living up to potential to the point where you do give up on the dream of comedy, the book. There's something to be said about the fact that you still hung on to it and you did it.
Yeah. I think this is the challenge that a lot of people have. Cause I thinking through this conversation, we're going down this path of where I'm thinking that these are very, very similar topics that were, 15 years apart.
Yeah.
Right. Where it was the regret thing. Like I would have regretted if I never tried to stand up comedy. And because of the book, if I had that calling, I recognized it. Because I went back 10 years earlier with a couple of friends at a couple of different times who reminded me, because I forgot that if this was a 10-year thing. I was reminded of it, that I had actually told people I should write a book, and it would be based on my mission and my sales. And I said, that's going to be a unique story. And I didn't write it. And then when I finally had the book out, two people said, Harry, you wrote the book you talked about 10 years ago. Remember when we were... It's like, oh my goodness, that's right. That. I thought I just had the idea years ago, but I forgot that I actually had the idea, and to the point where I was telling somebody. So when I had that voice again, when you say, Jeremy, I mean, if you ever say, I should do this, where does that idea come from? When you say, I should do this, we need to listen. Because that's when we're completely honest.
Yeah.
I should do blank. And when we hear what we just said, that to me is the voice of God. It's like, you were being communicated with something that's deep within us. Like if you see people that are like on the side of the road, sometimes we drive by people all the time. We drive by people on the side of the road. Sometimes we say, I should stop. Right. And you do that. And it's like, yeah, that was a great experience. I know I helped that person. I'm not saying we do that all the time, but you get the idea, right? We say I should stop and say hello to that person, or I should help. I see that person over there. I see that they're having, I should. And when we say I should and do, there's a reward to that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought on that concept?
I would totally agree. And I would say I'm pretty good at the shoulds and having those promptings, but not always taking the action. And I think the reasons vary. I think you've touched on a lot of them, but I think if we're all pretty honest, we have a lot of those shoulds. And I think the challenge is, how do we get past that and turn it into do?
Mm.
I don't know that I have the answer.
Yeah.
But I know it's something we wrestle with, yeah. Of you know, what you've touched on, the fear, insecurity, what others will think, getting out of our comfort zone. And I think it goes back to, again, just like taking a step towards that should.
Yeah.
But you've done it with.
Well, I think, and we all have, if it's, if we're in the church and we see someone that is older sitting alone, we say things like, I should go talk to that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I should hold the door open for this person going into this restaurant, or I should ask if this person in the grocery store who is looking up at something that's higher up, I should ask them if they need help. And we do those things without really thinking, right? They're little, tiny little messages that we frequently listen to. And if we can do anything off of this conversation, you and I, is the next time we use the should word, we need to listen to what we just said.
Yeah.
Because we say it so, and I do the same thing. We say it so often in passing, like we don't take ourselves seriously. It's like, why did I say I should write a book? Or why did I say I should lose weight? Or why did I say I should give up drinking? Or why did I say I should be nicer to whatever, my parents, my children, or whatever, right? Why do we say I should? And because we know that comes from deep within.
Yeah.
And we know that's the path. I'm thinking. I mean, we maybe, I'm going to do some research on this.
Listen, you're hitting on something. And actually, as you're talking, I was just reminded of something from years ago. I want to say this would have been probably 7-ish years ago, something like that. That doesn't really matter, but just for reference. But I was on my way to an event. It was a conference I was just participating in, and I was running late, which sometimes I tend to do. Unfortunately, I don't build enough margin, and I think, oh yeah, there won't be any traffic.
Right.
You know, I'll hit all the lights, which, you know, is not true in Orlando. So I'm close to my destination, but I'm late. And I get to this stoplight, and it's right next to a gas station. And I see just around the corner on the cross street there, there's a lady her car is broken down, and she's in the road. And I can tell, you know, people, honk. I mean,
right, yeah.
You see there's a car broken down, but they, you know, they don't care. And they're driving around. And here I am. I'm at the intersection on the other street. Like, I could have just pulled into the gas station right there. And to your point, I had the thought, you know, I should stop and help this lady. But I'm running late for this conference I'm supposed to be at. Now, mind you, if I'm late to this, there's zero impact to anyone at this event. It's not like I'm the speaker.
Right. Yeah.
So in that moment, I had a choice to make, and I chose to drive on and get to my event.
Mm.
because of my needs in that moment, you know, the fact that I was running late. And so it was, I was already upset about that. Yeah. So I'm sharing that and processing that with you because I have never forgotten that moment. That's and frankly, weird. it bothered me for a long time, because for me to stop for 5 minutes and be one person who would get out and help this lady, I could see she's on the phone. She's stuck in the road. I'm sure I could have flagged down a couple other people, like, come over here, you know,
right.
It'll take us 5 minutes, push this thing off the road into the parking lot. And buddy, I didn't. And man, I'm not kidding you. I was pretty upset with myself for a long time. Mm. And even telling the story, I go, what, why would I have not taken 5 minutes out of my life? What? Cause I was going to miss 5 minutes of a talk.
Right. Yeah.
Just an example on that thread there, of what you're saying, of where we see these moments maybe as small, but I think collectively when we do those little things that are the shoulds that get us, maybe it is a little out of your comfort zone. It's like, hey, I got to go talk to a stranger, offer help. And they're gonna like, what are you doing? Or who are you? I don't know what story we tell ourselves, but continually doing those little things add up to big things. And I think influence all areas of our life. And frankly, it just makes us better people who do good in the world and leave a better impression on folks. But it's interesting to talk about it. And then now just for that story to come up for me of, wow, what a missed opportunity.
Oh, it's so funny. I mean, not funny, but ironic. I don't know what the word is. It reminds me of how these things remain in us.
Yeah.
And in the book I wrote, so this happened in, I was probably 19 years old. I wrote about it when I was 60-ish. So what is that, 41 years? I'm sure the person doesn't remember, but I was on my way to church at night, rainy night. The person in front of me at a stop sign was missing all kinds of opportunities to go. And I laid on the horn and followed the car for the next couple of miles into the church parking lot.
Oof. Oof.
And went over and immediately apologized.
You did?
Right. Yes. That stayed with me. What a jerk, right? I mean, I was just thinking about what? Yeah. Here's a woman, a young mother with a couple of kids in the back seat, rainy night. Here's a 19-year-old kid who knows nothing in life other than to lay on the horn, probably gave her a jolt.
Yeah.
Like, who wants to have the horn blaring? It's just so awful. But it stayed with me.
Stayed with you.
I don't know if I really ever used the horn in that kind of moment of anger and frustration again in my life, because it was such a, you know. But anyway, but you remember these things,
remember. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I said good for you, because you did at least go apologize. I mean, there's something to be said for recognizing when we've messed up and acknowledging. So there was that, but I can totally.
Well, I had the opportunity. Like, so if that person that was stuck in the car and you saw their face, it saw them in the event, you would have said, you know.
But I never
drove by. Yep. I apologize, because you're that kind of guy. Right?
And what I hope. I hope. I'm not sure, man. After that moment, I started questioning myself, saying, man, wow, you couldn't even stop. Now, there were 100 other people.
Yeah, of course.
Too, but I don't care about them, because I can't control what they do, right? I can control me. And I think this is just a great, again, example of, I think, these moments we have. How do you think we could translate some of this over? I do want to touch a little bit on your book and just this idea of serving people, because you talk about selling in a great way. I love, I highlighted here in the opening where you talked about this feeling of many dread being viewed as the sleazy, money-hungry, self-serving types that have infiltrated the business of sales over the years. So there is that and you touched on it, you know, that perception of sales and the feelings that we might have about sales and what we think others might be viewing us as now, if we are in sales, right? There is that thought of, hey, how do people look at me now? So how do you push through that? How do you use some of these lessons of the shoulds and the moments of doing those small things? How could we tie that over to sales, you think?
Well, I one of the things that jumps out at me is that we can't change the perception until we have the conversation.
Hmm.
So someone is going to view me like every other salesperson in the world. It's like, you're in sales, they've already made a judgment. But that's okay. Once I have the conversation, they're going to see that I'm completely different.
Hmm.
And the only reason I'm completely different is the conversation is about them versus the conversation being about me. And when I make it about them and ask them questions and make eye contact and listen and acknowledge what they said, show some emotion and nod, you know, my facial expressions are in tune with the conversation. I'm smiling if they're smiling. I'm very serious if they're serious. I'm very, like, I was speaking to a woman recently who was very down. I was very, you know, very mellow, right? I was just, I was there empathizing with her. I don't know how to fake that. It's just like, this person is down. I'm not going to be all smiley and cheerful and say, get over it. I'm going to be relatable and help her through whatever she's going through. So this is all part of it. It's all part of a servant mindset. But when people see that, it's like, you know, I bought from you because you don't act like a salesperson. And when you have people saying that over and over again in your life, it's like, yeah, I'm on to something. You know, it's just being a human being and serving people. And, you know, it's just that relatability, authenticity. People talk about vulnerability, all of those things. I just thought about it as I'm there for that person. Without thinking, I got to be authentic now. I've got to be genuine. It's none of that. It was, I got to be there for this person, which probably came from the mission background.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you have that heart and that servant mindset. How do you, just thinking through some practical things, if folks that are in the sales environment, which to a certain extent, we're all in sales.
We are.
Right? In many ways. But how do you get to that conversation? As you know, that's the hard part. You were talking about, hey, when I get there in front of someone, they can see who I am and they can see that I'm different. But oftentimes the hardest part of sales is just getting that conversation to happen in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, you have to take action. The challenge that many have is that they don't want to make a call. They don't want to send an email. They don't want to go up to a stranger. We have to do that. There's no, you know, you just have to go up with a servant mindset. You just change your mindset and say, I've got to do this. And it's sort of like everyone who has a job is getting paid by an employer is in sales.
Yeah.
They interviewed for that job selling themselves.
Right.
They are trying to get promotions selling themselves. They are trying to have influence in the company selling themselves. Asking for some favors, selling themselves, all of that. You're in sales. Everybody is. Whether you're selling your ideas, you're pitching your beliefs, it's sales is everywhere. But we don't notice it. It's very natural for us. So if we could say, I've been selling my entire life, really. I sold my teachers. I sold a coach that I could be on the team. We do these things. We say it's actually pretty natural. I just need to adapt it for business. And when we do it, we say, I want to do my own thing. You can't do it without selling. So we have to get over the fear by looking back at our past successes is what I do and say, I've done it before. I've applied for jobs. I sold myself. I got nice salaries or wages. I can do this. I'm not anything different. I just have to do it from a servant mindset and get over the fear of talking to strangers, because and people are nice. So I'm just going to talk to people, be nice to them, smile, ask how their day is, and it'll all work out. So it's really that simple.
You make it sound so easy.
Right? It is. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's just like that.
Sales made easy. The podcast. Yeah, right. See, come there on. No, I love it.
Yeah.
One more thought on that is, what about rejection? Obviously, that's a huge thing for salespeople, for any of us, again, just dealing with rejection. But obviously, if you're in that true selling environment, you face that a lot. How have you handled that over the years? And how has it evolved, if at all, to where you just, no one loves to get rejected, right, but maybe it becomes a little easier. Just curious.
Yes. I don't remember exactly, but going from door to door, selling to businesses I did. Door to door in businesses, not house to house.
Oh, in business. Okay. Yeah. Still door to door though.
But door to door in residential is different.
Yeah.
Because you're really at risk
of
getting whatever shot in Florida or something, right?
Definitely yelled at.
In business, they expect it, right? They expect for strangers to come in and they're going to say, I'm all set. We're not interested. And they don't know me. I'm going to smile, but they have no idea who I am. I'm viewed like every other salesperson. So I have to remember that I'm like every other salesperson. So I'm going to find the friendly people. Eventually just say, I'm going to find the friendly people. And the friendly people will want to do business with me. The people who are not friendly, that don't like me, well, all right, there's enough friendly people that will like me. That's kind of what I did. So look for the friendly people.
Idea of just pushing through the no's and the rejection to get to the people that I want to connect with, I know will be receptive to me and my message.
100%. And people who are, we're not interested. We're all set. That's really as bad as it gets. They're not saying get out of here or we're going to punch you. Right.
It's the standard line.
We're all set. We're not interested. Or did you see the sign on the door? Because back, there's a lot of no soliciting signs. And I would say, well, I didn't think that was for me. I thought it was for people who are actually selling. I'm not selling anything today. You know, I'm not carrying flowers or candy in here to sell. I'm here to find out who makes your decisions regarding this before the internet. Right. And then
that's a great line, though. I think it's a great way to handle that, because that is a thing that people obviously face, is this immediate wall, right? Now we're good, don't need you, there's a sign, and so there's not even that opportunity to engage.
Yeah, and if you look the part, you go in presentable, respectful, apologetically almost. Not that we apologize for, but it's not with ego.
It's not with ego, yep.
Right?
There's some humility there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Makes all the difference. Wow, this is great. I told you, before we started recording, see, I know you just looked at the clock and you said, man, this is good. We got to come on. Let's get going. And
this has been a half an hour.
We talked about time and we're still trucking. So we'll try to wrap this up here to be sensitive to your time and everyone else's. But this has been helpful and really insightful in so many ways. But I did want to bring it home to where you are now. Obviously, you've touched on a lot of this, potential, the shoulds, this idea of moving towards what maybe that voice that you're hearing to say, hey, you should be doing this. This is your passion, your calling. Write the book. We come out of COVID finally, thankfully. And now it's a little bit of a new world out there where the content, it really is exploded out there in the social platforms. And you've really, really jumped on that. So can you talk about what you're up to today and really how you're helping people in the sales world and the business world and what your passion is now? And just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, you gave this has led to a speech I will be writing, which is going to be something like turn the shoulds into do. Something along those lines.
I'll take all the credit.
Yes, you'll get half the royalties. So yeah, so what I do is I work with people who want to grow their sales without being pushy. It's really that simple. So they can focus on their business with growth versus starving. Because if you're not good in sales, your business isn't going to survive. It's just you have to sell in order to succeed. So whether that be through coaching, workshops, seminars, or speaking, those are the things that you can find me at harry@sellingwithdignity.com. And we can have a chat and talk about if there's a way to serve you.
That's great. And obviously the Sales Made Easy podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I see all these people you're bringing on. You've got great folks that I'm sure are bringing a lot of wisdom and tactical tips and ideas to help people, right?
Absolutely. There's some great, great guests. We won't go into all of them, but scroll through that. Liz Wendling, Colin Smith talks about listening. Liz Wendling talks about, you know, what are some key words you can use or to avoid servant-mindedness, right? Those are the what topics I really love.
Great. So be sure to check that out. As we close, I wanted to ask you, is there something you would encourage folks to take action on as it relates to our conversation and this idea of an idea they have, a goal they have, a vision, a prompting? What's a step that people can take? And just thinking through what you've done. And because again, sometimes it's just getting started and moving in the direction toward your desired future.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? What do you think?
I think the first thing is that once you recognize what it is that you said I should do, is you need to get out your phone, your computer, and Google steps to become, and just look at what I can do. And if you know somebody that's doing it, you have a conversation and say, I want to do this. I remember we had a guy on a podcast, and Daniel Gomez is his name. It's a motivational speaker. And he came on the podcast. This is another one of those things. I said, I should call that guy. So shortly after the podcast, I called Daniel and I said, dude, I want to do what you're doing. I love what you're doing. I want to do that. And he says, you need to come to my boot camp. And, you know, I spent some money, but it opened up my world, right? If I didn't spend the money and I didn't go, I could have said, no, that's too much. I don't want to make an investment. I just said, I want to do what you do. And the person says, it's going to cost you money. Am I going to say, well, money is, it's not worth it. It's, to me, it was worth it. And it changed. This is all part of the whole change. I can't say that changed my life. It helped throughout the whole process, right? It gave me some clarity as to what the end game was. I wasn't there yet, and I still had some work to do internally. But at that point, going through, spending the time with him, having him in my circle of influence was definitely a game changer for me. So it might be finding a coach, someone who is doing what you want to do, and say, you might say, I don't want to spend the money. That may prevent you from doing what you want to do. It's just the way it is. I can't explain why that is. I spent money to become a stand-up, do the stand-up. I just spent a few $100s. I spent money on coaching to become a speaker. You know, I spent money along the way. And the money is just an investment into my future. And that's the way I looked at it.
That's a great perspective. I think we have to recognize the reality of that, that, you know, we've got to make an investment in what we really want to do. Whether it is money, it's time. Mm. Yeah, it's a lot of things, but I think your point's well taken. And I like that idea of another person. It just goes back to what we were talking earlier of some accountability, some encouragement. Maybe it is a formal relationship and a coaching, but it is, could also be someone in your life that mm-hmm. you're saying, hey, I'm wanting to do this and I need you to help encourage,
right,
and even challenge me toward that goal, because otherwise I might just talk about what I'm going to do,
exactly,
not what I am doing. You know, it's this, yeah. it's this idea of action today, even if it's small, it's moving in the direction of where we want to go. And so I think that's a huge part of this. So any final thoughts, anything else we didn't cover that you think would be helpful as we.
Yeah. I just say it would take that first step, mm-hmm. whatever it is, take a step towards that direction. Mm-hmm. Don't ignore the should part.
Hmm.
Once you say, I should give up whatever, or I should lose this, or I should start this, go see how to do that. And then start taking, okay, so what are the steps I need? You can Google, what are the steps I need to lose weight? What are the steps I need to do to start a podcast? What are the steps I need to learn to play the guitar? What are the steps I need to do stand-up comedy? What are the steps I need to do skits? What are the steps I need, right? Just, I mean, I have interests in other things. It's like, okay, a thought came across my mind today about sketch comedy.
Hmm.
And I'm sharing that because now I'm curious. It's like, I would like to do that where you're on stage with other people,
mm.
sharpening each other. I forgot what they call it.
Is it
improv?
Improv. Yeah. It sounds like improv.
Yeah.
Which honestly is terrifying to me.
Yeah. But
improv.
What's your thought about it though?
Well, because I'm imagining getting up there, one, looking like a fool, because improv is you have no idea what's coming and you've got to yeah. adapt now and you have to improvise and yeah. you've got to keep it going. And honestly, just that whole thought,
it's scary.
It doesn't bring warm and fuzzy feelings.
No. But it's funny to watch others do it.
It is hysterical. Right?
And they're no different than the rest of us. They just put themselves out and they rehearse.
Yeah.
Right. So there's practice behind the scenes. No sure. one's going on stage in front of an audience doing it for the first time. Right. That's what we think sometimes. But it's like, if I want to sing, whatever that creativity yeah. is, we have half of our brain that says focus on creativity. And a lot of us dismiss it and say, no, I want to focus on the mundane because that's yeah. easy. But we could go on forever.
Man.
Sorry about that, but no. Take a step, folks. Take a step. Good things will happen when you do.
Absolutely. Thanks, Harry. This has been fun and challenging and vulnerable and all kinds of good things, but encouraging too. I think
awesome.
Hopefully it's encouraging to all of us that we can still act on our goals and our dreams. It's never too late and we just got to take that step. So appreciate your time. Go find Harry online, sellingwithdignity.com. He's all over social media as well and putting out really great content. So thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's been a blast.
Well, special thanks to Harry Spate for joining me on this first podcast episode. He provided so much insight and wisdom and expertise to us. And I hope you really found his story inspirational and took some things away that you can apply to your life, to your business, to things you're working on. And be sure to look up Harry online at sellingwithdignity.com. That's his website. He's highly active on LinkedIn. And I think he's on TikTok as well. I'm not on TikTok, but be sure to check him out there. He's just got great content all over and he's just all about helping people. So thanks again to Harry Spate. And thank you to all of you who joined in to listen to this episode. I hope it was helpful to you, and I hope you'll tune in for the next one. Be sure to subscribe
to the podcast as soon as you can, and that way you'll be notified as soon as the next episode drops. Really appreciate your time today and look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care.